From training to performing, join our big league conversation. Welcome to the CSP Elite Baseball Development Podcast with your host, Eric Cressy.
Welcome back to the CSP Elite Baseball Development Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Cressy, and this is episode 110. We are back after a hiatus for the craziness of the baseball offseason as well as the holiday season. Today kicks off a new season where we'll roll out some content that we've stockpiled during our hibernation here. To kick things off, though, we've got a guest host compilation that's actually been in the works for a while. Three members of our Cressy Sports Performance Massachusetts team collaborated on this one. Pete Dupuis, my business partner and our vice president, really moderates the discussion and picks the brain of John O'Neill, a previous podcast guest who's our director of performance at the Massachusetts facility, as well as Jordan Krause, another previous guest who is our pitching coordinator at the Massachusetts facility. They'll dig in on the concept of, you know, the range of options available to players for summer pitching development and highlight how we've attacked development in this population with our college summer development program at CSP Mass. I think there's some really important insights here for not just college players, but also a lot of high school players who may be moving on to college baseball, who are trying to figure, you know, both their short and long-term developmental calendars out. So there's some good insights in here that I think will really benefit not just players, but parents and coaches as well. This episode is brought to you by Athletic Greens, the most comprehensive NSF certified for sport daily nutritional supplement I've ever tried. With so many stressors in life, it's difficult to maintain effective nutritional habits and give our bodies the nutrients they need to thrive. As a father of three young kids and a co-founder of multiple businesses in multiple states, on top of still being an avid exerciser, I know that busy schedules can really take their toll on us. Whether it's poor sleep, exercise or life stressors, environmental factors, or simply not eating enough of the right foods, we can wind up deficient nutritionally. This is where Athletic Greens can really help. It's a game-changing nutritional insurance policy. They simplify the logistics of getting optimal nutrition on a daily basis by giving you just one thing with all the best things. And that's why I use it daily and recommend it to our athletes. One scoop of Athletic Greens contains 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced ingredients, including a multivitamin, multimineral, probiotic, green superfood blend, and more. They work together to fill the nutritional gaps in your diet, increase energy and focus, aid in digestion, recovery, and supporting of a healthy immune system. This all can happen without taking multiple products. While most nutritional products come to market and stay stagnant, Athletic Greens continues to obsessively improve this one holistic formula based on the latest research, producing 53 improvements over the last decade. They invest in the most absorbable and natural source of each ingredient and go above and beyond in third-party testing to ensure their customers continue to receive the highest quality and best daily nutritional habit on the planet. It's lifestyle friendly, whether you're keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free, and contains less than 1 gram of sugar without compromising on taste. They put 75 ingredients through the NSF for Sport certification to come up with a formula that's trusted by some of the world's best athletes, including our own. Right now, Athletic Greens is giving our listeners 10 free travel packets with their subscription. Simply go to athleticgreens.com/Cressy to receive my offer. These travel packs are perfect for supporting your immune system, energy, and gut health when you're traveling for games, training, or simply when you're on the go. They can be a great counterbalance to less than ideal on-the-road food options. So if you want to bridge the gap between deficient and optimal and give yourself the best chance to get nutrient diversity, then head to athleticgreens.com/Cressy and get your 10 free travel packets today. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/Cressy, C-R-E-S-S-E-Y.
Welcome to the Elite Baseball Development Podcast. My name is Pete Dupuis. I should be an unfamiliar voice on your end, as I have never once been involved in this. However, I am Eric Cressy's business partner. I started our Massachusetts location alongside him and Tony Gentilcore back in the summer of 2007, and I have been here in the background quietly listening to this podcast for a couple years now. But today, I get to MC/host facilitate a conversation, and I'm in the room with a couple of colleagues. I have John O'Neill to my left. John's the director of performance here, and you might recognize him as a one-time guest, I believe, a multi-time host of this program, and he's the guy who effectively runs this facility while I pretend to. Jordan Krause is here. He is also a one-time guest of the program. He's our pitching coordinator here at CSP Massachusetts. And the reason I brought the three of us together today is because we're jumping into the time of year where we start talking about and planning for our summer program, our elite college development program. I guess I confuse this with the podcast name as well because we're all super elite. But anyway, I am routinely discussing the program with athletes, parents, coaches, colleagues, and I am, in fact, not a pitching coach and not a strength coach. So despite the fact that I have almost 15 years of discussing what we do, there are just times when I'm not the optimal person to answer the questions that I'm being hit with, and my routine is to walk into one of their offices and say, you need to tell me how to better approach this question or this question or this question. And I think recently we came to the conclusion that it might be better that you guys hear the answers to those questions in their words. So this is going to be a two-part conversation. First, we're going to talk about the merits of a summer of development in a weight room like ours versus the merits of playing summer ball, because this is in no ways a mandate that people skip summer ball. There's definitely value there, and we are proponents of it for a number of our athletes. And then second, we're going to hit those questions. We're going to get their attitudes and opinions on who the optimal type of player is to come through this program, and we're going to talk some baseball. Sound good, gentlemen? All right, let's start this up. First things first, I'm going to have John explain what this program looks like in some structure so that you have some context going in.
Sure. So I'll go through kind of a rundown of what the program actually looks like. This upcoming year will be my fifth year involved with it, fourth or fifth year, kind of overseeing and managing the logistics of it, from training to pitching to manual therapy, just making sure everything kind of flows together. But it's a 10-week program. It is meant for pitchers, basically from, you know, incoming freshmen in college. We have the occasional high school kid. It is meant for as a college program, but for incoming freshmen all the way through, you know, incoming grad students. So we've had kids as old as 22, 23 in the program. Like I said, it's 10 weeks, 6 days a week training, 5 days a week of pitching. That's all with the coach, usually with multiple coaches, which Jordan will explain a little better. All the training is individual, individual training done in a group environment, just like the CSP semi-private model. Additionally, everybody's getting right now a bi-weekly manual therapy appointment, which serves as like a really good check-in for guys if they might have a soft tissue limitation that we as on the S&C side really can't address and we want to refer out. So that's a bi-weekly appointment for everybody. But I think that kind of covers the overall logistics of the program. Pete, did you have kind of follow-up within that question?
We're going to go deep into how you think about program design for the athletes. We're going to have Jordan get into what that 10-week calendar looks like as it relates to onboarding an athlete, designing their throwing programs, matching up with throwing partners, all that stuff, live ABs. We'll go there. Before we do that, Jordan, I'm interested to hear your take. What does an athlete look like on paper coming out of a spring season that would not be appropriate to skip summer ball?
So it really comes down to, are you getting meaningful innings and are you in the role that you want to be in? So if you're in a position on the team that you think you are happy with and you're getting the innings and you have the job that you want, I think it might be more beneficial for you to go play summer ball, go compete, go have some fun with it. But if you're not, that might be a good opportunity for you to come in and develop over the summer and improve on the area that you might be lacking. That might be causing you to not get those innings that you want.
Okay. One of the questions I run into a lot with parents here as it relates to the program and summer ball is there a sweet spot in the timing of your college experience where you need to definitively play summer baseball because it's imperative, meaning like post-freshman year, does it make more sense than post-junior year, things of those nature? And forgive me if that's a dumb question, but it's one that I've been answering a little bit recently and I've been making it up as I went.
Yeah, so the real answer is it really depends on who it is. I'm not going to use that term anymore throughout the rest of this conversation because I don't think that provides any value. I could probably say it depends on every single question that I get asked here. I think personally for me, I think summer ball is probably more important later in your college career, post-senior year, if you're doing a grad year and you have a year of eligibility, which I know a lot of kids right now do have those extra years, but To me, it's develop early. That way you can earn those meaningful innings that Jordan was talking about. I also think training-wise, you're in probably the best sweet spot to really put on good size and strength if you're a smaller 18, 19-year-old compared to being 22, 23. Doesn't mean you can't improve a lot at 22, 23. It just means that, like, you know, incoming freshman, post-freshman year of college, you've just played probably more than you ever have, at least in terms of practice and showing up to the field. And this is kind of a good opportunity to step back and develop and worry about, you know, getting a good sophomore, junior, senior year under you. Jordan, what's your answer to that?
No, I would agree with everything you just said. The only thing that I would add to that is it depends on your career aspirations too. You know, if you're not really somebody that has long-term aspirations and you're not looking to play potentially after college, you might be better off, you know, hitting some summer ball, having some fun with it. But like John said, it really depends on where you're at in your development process, where you're at within your role on the team, and then combine that with where you want to go. You can kind of make that decision based on, you know, all those variables and kind of come up with the best decision for you for the summer.
And I think the other thing, too, is it depends on where you're about to play summer ball. So, you know, we've had a lot of kids play different leagues, Cape League. We've had kids out in the Northwoods, had kids in California, kids in the Carolinas, NECBL Futures. Those are just like the first five or six that come to mind in terms that we've seen kids from maybe the year after or 2 years prior. But kids have very, really varied experiences at those. So if you're somebody who, you know, you're going to pitch on the Cape, no shot you should turn that down. Like, go pitch on the Cape, get exposed to scouts, face the best competition you can. But if you're being sent out to play in the middle of nowhere and you really don't want to spend your, you know, nothing wrong with South Dakota, but if you really don't want to spend your summer in South Dakota, not surrounded by family at all, maybe it is an opportunity to say, all right, this is a development summer. And so it depends on where you're going to be placed, where you're going to play. You know, if you have a cool opportunity summer wise, go do it. If you're not thrilled with the opportunity you're getting, maybe that's a time to step back and say, all right, I'm going to train. I'm going to focus on being better. I'm going to focus on myself, focus on creating a better opportunity for me for the next summer.
And that seems to be a good point to point out the fact that athletes aren't foregoing the entirety of the summer ball experience by participating with us. I tend to refer to this as summer baseball without the gameplay and without the bus rides. And by that, I mean it's nothing but clubhouse environment from start to finish. Guys are being paired with throwing partners for the summer. They are experiencing similar routine. They're just not out there getting those innings. And there are ways that we help offset that with things like live ABs and simulating a baseball experience to a certain extent. But the reality is a lot of what guys look forward to as it relates to summer ball is the culture and the community and the dynamic. And I think, if anything, we amplify that based on the environment that the guys get plugged into. One of the things that I'd like to touch on before I lose my train of thought on it is the discussion I have with parents of athletes who are not rising freshmen, meaning like still in high school, planning to report back to a high school program in September or maybe August, depending on the time or where you are in the country. With those athletes, I discourage onboarding athletes of that nature because, in my opinion, and you guys can correct me if you disagree, it's not so much about physical capability so much as it is social skills. They're emotionally not mature, like some of the athletes that they're standing alongside. And to me, there is too big of a disparity between, say, a 15 or 16-year-old socially, then they're, you know, from there to a 21, 22-year-old athlete. And honestly, what makes the program great in a lot of ways is that social dynamic and the fact that we curate an environment that makes sense. And putting multiple people into a program who just plain would never cross paths, would not interact socially, it hurts the culture, it hurts the community. So that's how I deflect the parents of the athletes who say, well, he's a sophomore, but he's 6'4", and I'm told he's projectable. And so that's how I kick it aside. But I'm interested to hear if you guys think I could do a better job of having that conversation, or if you think there's something that we should highlight in those discussions.
I think it comes down to, you know, we can't monitor athletes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You know, this isn't, we don't have a dorm set up. We don't have RAs. You know, we're coaches. We work with people for the hours we get them. And in the summer program, you're talking, you know, 1 to 2 hours on the pitching side, a couple hours on the training side. So you are talking some days where it might be a 3-4 hour day with lunch in the middle. So you are here or around here most of the day. But that still doesn't count for, you know, some weekends, some nights, mornings. And so when you're 20, 21, 22, you should be able to figure out, you know, what to do with your time, how to food shop, how to cook, et cetera. When you're 15, 16, 17, the reality is you have to, unless you grew up in the area or you live in the area or you have family near here, you're living on your own or you're living near here in, you know, an Airbnb, an extended stay hotel, whatever it is, something that you're going to need to be responsible for yourself. And we can't really babysit you differently if you're 16 compared to 21. You're going to be on your own a lot, especially for that age. And you're also going to be surrounded by kids that are 4 or 5 years older than you, which my assumption would be a lot of parents would not want that scenario for 15, 16, 16 year olds. But that's more I don't have any hesitation on the training side for them. On the throwing side, same thing. I see high school kids come through here all the time for years now. And I think we do a really good job with that population. But we just can't monitor what goes on outside of the gym to as closely as I think we would need to with that age group.
That makes perfect sense. All right, so let's get into a little bit of a discussion about how you guys think about structuring the program week one through week 10. I'll start with Jordan because I've been heavy on prompting discussion with John to this point. Jordan, can you take me from day one, athlete moves into Massachusetts, arrives, and they walk through their door? I fully appreciate the fact that it's kind of a combination process with John or the team screening the athlete in advance of designing programming, but you also play a role getting them on video, getting them to throw and get some kind of entry point information. Can you tell me a little bit about, let's say, the first half of the program, and we'll have you do the same after?
Sure. Yeah. So I'll let John touch on the evaluation portion that they do on the strength and conditioning side. That's usually what it starts with. And then for me on the throwing side, everyone's going to come in and throw an initial bullpen, assuming that they are ready for it and built up for it. And we're just going to collect as much information as we can up front. So they're going to throw a bullpen and I'm going to watch them warm up, prepare, do their bands, plyos, throwing routine, all that kind of stuff. I'm going to watch them go through that process, make sure that their routine is where I think it should be. And then we're going to collect videos of their delivery and then videos of each pitch coming out of their hand. So we can look at that stuff and make decisions based on their pitch arsenal, as well as collect TrackMan data on all their pitches. So that's kind of the upfront information collection. And then from there, I'm going to collaborate with the strength and conditioning coach that was involved with their assessment so we can get on the same page in terms of what direction we want to take them. And then I'm going to meet with each athlete individually one-on-one to go over all the information that we collected. So we're going to sit down, go over their video, go over their TrackMan report, go over all that stuff, and we're going to come up with a plan together. So we're going to go over their goals, what their expectations are, and we're going to collaborate on those two things so that they can be involved in that decision-making process on where we're taking them this summer. I think it's really important that they have a say in where we want to go. At the end of the day, it's their career and it's not mine. I'm just a coach that's here to help them. And that's our role here at CSP is to help these guys. So I want them to be involved with that decision-making so they can have the buy-in and all the upfront stuff that we need. And from there, we kind of put the throwing program together. We'll have their individual drills, corrections, plyos, all that kind of stuff built out for them. In their program, as well as like the distances and intensities that they're going to be throwing throughout the week. We're going to build them into some bullpens. And like you mentioned, the end game is to get them into some live situations that we can help them execute the actual pitching to. And you also mentioned, you mentioned the throwing partners. So after we come up with a plan for them, we're going to match them up with a throwing partner. Based on, you know, arm slot, based on how long and how far they're going to throw, based on what they're working on. So if we have guys that are working on similar things, we'll try and pair them up together so they can help each other and kind of get that camaraderie there too. So that's kind of the first half of the program.
Okay, so you said two things that I want to highlight. And this is possibly for the people in the audience who run a program of their own of this nature, maybe you're a gym owner who's entertaining the idea of doing something similar. And these are sometimes lessons learned the hard way. And one is it's imperative that those day one numbers not just be collected, but be put in front of the athlete. they need to understand what their starting point is, because if there's one thing I've seen many, many times over the last 5 to 6 years, it's people who come in with a supposed starting point in mind. I was told I sat 92, 93 this year, and then they come out and Jordan's saying, hey, why were they 85, 86 in that initial go around? So it in a sense, protecting ourselves, right on the front end, we're saying, this is your body weight. This is exactly what we agreed. You stood there, you saw the number. This is how hard you were throwing. This was your spin rate. I don't care what metrics we're talking about. They need to be documented and put in front of the athlete. Then we can set reasonable goals. The second thing you said that I want to highlight, because I think you guys do this really, really well, is you bring them in and you let them warm themselves up. You don't walk them in and say, all right, here's our system. Go over there, do 10 of these, do 5 of these. No, you watch them in their element, for lack of a better term, because both in the cage and on the training floor, I think the team does a really nice job of not disrupting what's working. If anything, doubling down on maybe unique attributes for the athlete. And so it gives you an opportunity to see how they operate, see them at what their supposed best is, and then evaluate from there. And I don't want to minimize that, because I think it is a differentiator that makes the program more effective, because we're not installing our system. We're tweaking theirs to make it more effective. John, can you do the same thing for us? Talk about what day one looks like into the mid program?
Yeah, totally. I'll touch on some of you just said too. I've done evals here on hundreds, if not in the 4 digits of pitchers over the last 5 years or so. Majority of pitchers are telling me they're throwing 3 to upwards of 7 miles an hour harder than we actually see in the cage. Especially the younger, the higher that number is, the older, the lower that number is. That's more subjective and anecdotal than anything. But I've had kids tell me they're, you know, like you said, some crazy number that's 6-7 miles an hour above what we actually see in the cage. So it's not something that we did originally. I remember probably 2018 not doing that and not telling people day one numbers. And then 5-6 weeks in being like, all right, hey, look at your numbers, where you're at right now. And pretty much to a T, every single kid was like, wait, I'm not throwing any harder. I'm throwing the exact same. And it's like, well, no, you're actually like 3-4 miles an hour ahead of where you were. This might be something you get into in a little bit. I don't know if that's in a future question, but like this is, I guess, 2018, 19, 20, 21 average, the mean velocity gain from day one top fastball to last day top fastball is over 4 miles an hour every year. Usually sits between like 4 and 4.2. So we collect those numbers. We look at them. You know, that means a couple kids are up 1 or 2. A couple kids are up 6 or 7. And then it's, you know, the average is kind of right in the middle. But on the training side, in terms of day one, because I think that was the original question, we're looking at basically everything that we can from a more health standpoint. From a health standpoint, as in joint range of motion, both isolated and integrated, isolated as in hips, shoulders, knees, elbows, et cetera. And then integrated as in, what does a squat look like? What does a toe touch look like? What is a push up? What are some different scap screens that we look at? Our eval is like 22 to 25 tests, somewhere in that neighborhood, that we run through. After that, we do a little bit on the performance, side as well. Like last year we looked at a broad jump. We looked at a 10 yard sprint. We've looked at some lateral bounding and some different jumps like that in the past. That's something that each year we tinker with a little bit what we're looking at. Body weight, you mentioned, is a big one. So we get initial body weights. I would say half to three quarters of the kids we get are kids who are looking to put on weight. And so actually tracking body weight and having some objective data behind that is really important. But we're using all the initial, like I said, the 20 plus tests that we're looking at to basically match a program to the person. And, you know, whether it's somebody who is really stiff and we were trying to loosen them up, if it's someone who's really stiff and we kind of like the stiffness that they have because it helps them on the mound, which is possible. If it's someone who's really loose and we need to provide good stiffness for in the weight room, you know, via heavier lifting, tempo work, more positional stuff. But there's all kinds of avenues to take. I think probably in the industry or historically we're known for kind of, you know, heavy lifting and arm care and stuff like that. But we have a pretty wide variety of things that we're working on, just depending on the individual. We've had kids who come in and lift like 2, maybe 3 days a week if they're already super strong and they need to be more explosive and just move with a lot better efficiency. We've had kids that are really small and weak and Maybe their delivery is really clean, and maybe the stuff that Jordan's working on is not an overhaul. It's more of a tinker. And so for us, that's like a kid we can be a little more aggressive with in the weight room. But our eval process for that summer program, we're looking at a couple days in the beginning where Jordan and I are spending a lot of time together looking at basically player profiles, both on the throwing and training side, and then trying to match up a plan for them. Because I think one of the biggest differentiators that we have, I think, compared to other places I've seen or heard about, is the communication between the departments. Obviously, we're sitting here talking together now, but we talk pretty much every day, especially that time of year, just trying to make sure the plans match up. Like, we don't want somebody, like, crushed or really sore the day before from the weight room the day before they're supposed to be doing something on the mound that's also really intense. Like, we're going to try to match up those variables and make it so that you're always fresh or as fresh as you can be for your skill work, which, like I said, I think that's something that kind of sets us apart at this point. I think a lot of people probably do lifting well. A lot of people do pitching well. I'm sure there's a lot of good plays out there. I at least this is obviously a very biased opinion, but I think that we do as good a job as we can of communicating and matching up what somebody's working on. So if it's somebody who struggles to get into a back hip load on the mound, maybe that's somebody who we look at our biomechanical assessment on the training side, and we say, hey, like, that actually makes a lot of sense. As soon as they go into hip flexion, their back leg ERs. And so we're going to make sure we find stuff, not just in the warmups, but stuff in the med ball throws and jumps and core work and lifts that helps promote getting into better positions there. It doesn't mean they're not lunging, they're not squatting, not doing all these things that most people are doing. But that just means that is something really specific that we're going to help Jordan do a better job with. I look very much at training as you're just trying to, like, create this kind of like best possible space to work with for the skill coach, or in this case for the pitching coach, to be able to make adjustments.
Okay, so you mentioned that you deliberately think of program design in a way that isn't going to necessarily conflict with, say, a taxing day on the mound the next day. That brings me to the question: do you think of the stages of the program from a strength training standpoint as having a period of time where it's appropriate to be more aggressive, like, and almost as if with our pro guys coming in, where you say, hey, early off season, we're going to crush some weights, you guys are going to get strong, but then you taper them a little bit so that they feel good getting on field?
Totally. Yeah. So, and I think that's something that a lot of the kind of industry, or at least what I hear and see from other places, we can improve as a whole, as a field, of not creating these competing variables, not having really hard training at the same time as in season or really hard stuff on the field or on the skill side. So the way the actual program breaks out, 10 weeks for the average person, average as in like your standard, not someone who's crazy strong and we're trying to give a really unique program to, or not someone who's really far on the other end, like the middle standard deviation of kids that we see, we are looking at phase one being very much like a volume accumulation. And so you're doing a higher amount of strength training, whether that's more time under tension, more reps, more sets, just volume in general is higher, more potential movements within a day. So it's higher volume at a slightly lower intensity. Phase two would be a higher intensity. So the weights start to get a little heavier, or they start to get heavier with maybe a slightly lower volume. And so it would be like high intensity, moderate volume. And then phase three for those kids would be more of a power speed-based phase, where their volume might be a little lower, intensity from a speed and power side is much higher. And all that stuff matches up the throwing side as well, because I think I'll kick it over to Jordan here, but I know on the throwing side it matches up somewhat similar to that as well.
Yeah, definitely. So on the throwing side, it's kind of the similar structure where in the beginning phase, we're kind of building some work capacity, building some volume, building into some more intensive mound work. Because a lot of guys will show up, tell me that they're ready for the mound, and we'll let them throw that initial bullpen, but they don't really understand what it takes to kind of build into a throwing progression. And so we'll build them into the mound work, and then we'll build that towards live at-bats. And that progression allows us to make some pretty good changes up front with their delivery, some of their movement stuff, you know, start to work on some of the other pitches that we wanted to work on, and then ultimately build that into the live at bats at the end of the summer.
Okay, so I have noticed over the years that the location or the environment in which you execute the throwing piece of the program changes over the course of the program. And by that, I mean, it seems it's front loaded with a lot of outside on field, long toss type stuff. And then toward the back end, you build toward a combination of stuff in the gym, in the pitching cage, and live ABs outdoors. Is there a reason why you scale back from that field-based stuff as you get to about the halfway point of the program? Can you explain that logic to me?
So in the beginning, like I kind of mentioned, we're building more work capacity. And then towards the end, we're getting a little bit more skill specific, where we're going to spend more time on the mound and spend more time, you know, throwing off the slope, so we can get more acclimated to what we're doing when we have to perform. So, you know, towards the end of the program, the mound work really amplifies. And so like the long toss and some of the volume of that kind of stuff cuts back a little bit to make up for that. Because like I said, ultimately what matters is what you do on the mound and what you do with the hitter in the box. So we're trying to get those guys best prepared for the live at-bats at the end so they can actually use the new skill set that they've been working on the last few weeks.
Perfect. Talk to me a little bit about throwing program, or not throwing program, forgive me, throwing partner assignments, how you think about that, whether you're willing to be flexible with them as in reassigning based on what you see over the course of a program. How do you guys attack that piece? Because it's imperative for the athletes to understand that they effectively have an accountability partner from start to finish based on what you guys decide is in their best interest.
Yeah. So the primary factors are arm slot and what they're working on. And arm slot really only matters to me because when they go out in long toss, we're going to have distances matched up. So, you know, we have some sidearm guys that don't ever get past 90 or 120. It doesn't make sense for them to go with somebody that likes to long toss, likes to stretch it out. So that's probably the first factor. And the second factor is what they're actually working on. So if we have multiple guys working on the same thing, we're going to try to pair them up together. So if two guys are trying to, you know, work on their back hip load, they're going to be partners so they can help each other. If we have two guys that are both trying to work on the efficiency of their fastball and how they spin it, they might be partners so they can give each other feedback on a day-to-day basis and have that accountability, like you said, with somebody else besides a coach, because we have, you know, 40 guys. We can't watch every single throw. You know, we're going to have those guys together so they can build that partnership and actually help each other along the way.
Okay. And with us enrolling up to as many as 50 athletes in the program, surely you can't handle that volume as a singular coach from a pitching standpoint. I mean, John's got an army of strength coaches alongside him on the training floor, but you can't be a one-man show. Can you talk to me a little bit about how you plan to attack that this summer? We've had Dakota in kind of the second-in-command role over recent summers. We talked to guys like Quinn. We have guys in mind. Can you talk about what your basically associate pitching coordinator looks like and how that person contributes?
Yeah, so every year, you know, it's based on the amount of pitchers that we have, you know, how many coaches we'll bring in. So last year we had Dakota helping out and, you know, we're talking on a day-to-day basis, making sure we're on the same page. You know, he's involved with the player plans. You know, we collaborate and make sure we're on the same page so that they're getting the same message every single day. That's one thing I think that messes a lot of guys up is they have a lot too many voices in their head, you know. One guy saying won't do one thing, another guy saying do another thing, and you're getting nowhere. Rather than having a very unified message and a unified system in play, so I think that's really important. And like I said, it'll just depend on how many guys we have versus how many players we have. That way, everyone gets the right amount of coaching. That way, we have the numbers kind of lined up that way.
Yeah, one thing I've noticed over the last couple summers is that as much as I believe you to be an exceptional pitching coordinator, there are times when your style, your approach, your tone doesn't resonate with the athlete. And I've seen athletes gravitate toward second-in-command type pitching coach. And that's not just specific to you. That was with Christian in year one. That was with Kyle in other years. There's just no guarantee that your style is the perfect fit. So it is nice that we have the flexibility to kind of also coaching match and not just throwing partners. And we see that on the training floor constantly. And it's nice to see that it's something we can facilitate in the cage as well, so that people, again, aren't being prescribed a system. They're getting kind of a curated collection of information based on how we see them interact with us, with the space, with their peers, and with our coaches. All right, John, if you wouldn't mind, I want to make sure that we don't brush over both the nutritional component and the manual therapy piece. I don't care what order you would like to touch on those, but I want you to talk a little bit about how we, if we look at these all as departments in our program, how they all speak to each other and how they collaborate in thinking about how we disseminate information and what's right at the right time. Can you give us, let's say, first an explanation of how we attack nutritional insights?
Sure. So one of our coaches, Josh Saul, runs all of our nutrition stuff. He's one of our S&C coaches. I should clarify there, but he's on the floor as an S&C coach, you know, 5 days a week. He's one of like the main faces that athletes are working with, getting coached by. He, with the summer program, will do basically a one-on-one 20, 30-minute meeting with each athlete at the beginning of the program. Get ahead of like, all right, what is your plan nutritionally? What do you struggle with? What can I help with? And each athlete from there might get a little more specific or individual information. You know, if you have a kid who's really locked in nutritionally, there might be a kid that Josh doesn't really need to meet with again. It's like, all right, you're good. We've had scenarios in the past where we've had kids that are kind of a train wreck on the nutrition side. And so Josh might be talking to that kid weekly just to touch in, make sure they know what they're doing. But we're basically trying to create this this environment where we are as in control as we can be of all of the variables. And so the last piece there you mentioned being manual therapy, so something more on the health and rehab side. But our manual therapist, Chris Howard, in the past, one of our PTs, Andrew Millett, has helped out as well, just depending on how many bodies that we have in the program. But you're getting like a biweekly half an hour with him. And, you know, it's a really good for kids. You know, maybe it's to get a forearm worked on if they have a history of forearm soreness, to get a tricep, shoulder, a lat, etc. Those are probably the most common ones that we see. But we can dictate a little bit on the S&C side. If we say, hey, Chris, like this guy gets really stiff into here. You know, the training stuff is helping a little bit, but I think manual therapy would kick it further in the direction we're trying to get. Same thing on the nutrition side. So, you know, we can use our evaluation and you know, Jordan's expertise of looking at the mechanics and say, hey, like this is a kid who can really benefit from gaining weight. And so his nutrition stuff, let's be a little more aggressive with it. Some kids get caught in the habit of, you know, they gain weight 2 years in a row and they threw harder and harder. And that third year, they're trying to do the same thing and it's not helping them at all. It's all bad weight. It's only hurting their mechanics. And so that becomes a different discussion where it's like, all right, hey, this kid needs to kind of maintain body weight, but move a lot more in a much more athletic manner. And so maybe that's someone who, let's talk to him nutrition-wise and make sure it's quality of food and portion size and meal timing more than just like, all right, hey, stuff your face with calories. And so all of those departments for us, you know, talk every day. I think from the outside, people probably think we have this like enormous, like major league style or MLB organization style staff where we've got people in different states and all kind of, and it's hard to communicate with people. In reality, we're a relatively small team and we are communicating every single day.
Yeah, the interesting thing about the nutrition piece is it kind of runs parallel to the velocity and body weight piece as far as athlete expectations go. I mean, if anything, for every kid who comes in and tells us they throw 5 miles per hour harder than they do, I've got 10 of them who tell me that they eat 1,500 more calories a day than they do. And so sometimes this is about getting them to see where their habits actually lie from a starting point. And Josh is good at that. He's got his precision nutrition background. He's got a lot of tools in his toolkit to nudge people in the right direction. It's worth noting we are not registered dietitians. We're not writing meal plans for our clients. We're staying well within our scope of practice there, but we're just helping kids develop better habits and make good decisions.
And I think too, like the idea that we're checking their body weight every week. The last couple of years, we've actually randomized what day it is on purpose. We used to do like every Tuesday afternoon you get weighed in, and so kids would be like, all right, Tuesday morning, I need to, you know, make sure I eat a lot so that I look good on the weigh-in day. And I purposely randomize it now. So you're getting weighed in once a week and it could be all over the map, which doesn't provide the most reliable data week to week, but over a 10-week sample size, it does. And so if we have kids that say, hey, I want to gain 15 pounds this summer, you know, that's a pound and a half a week. And, you know, it might be 0 pounds 1 week and 3 the next, but over a 10-week size, it's got to add up to 15. So I think the idea of randomizing the weigh-ins and making it such that they, you know, they need to be really consistent 7 days a week, not just the night before or morning of the weigh-in. And it's also a lot of people, this might be a question you touch on later too, but, you know, I think people really undervalue the idea of the environment and the accountability component of it. No kid is going to say, you know, my goals are to be average, or my goals are to have an average work ethic, or, you know, put a medium amount of time into doing something. But being in this environment kind of forces you to do all the things, you know, train 6 days a week, to stay accountable to things like your weight, to stay on top of your throwing program, to have a touch point with your pitching coach every single day, all that kind of stuff that I think goes really undervalued, because especially, you know, kids and parents, they all think that their kid is the hardest worker, and kids all think that they're they work harder than anyone else when they come here and they're just like everybody else.
So I want to take this as an opportunity to pivot selfishly. Jordan, I need you to educate me. One of the most common terms I run up against in this, when I'm speaking with the coaches, the athletes, and the parents, is pitch design. And to me, that can mean a lot of different things. What is pitch design to you within the confines of this program, and what is reasonable for managing expectations for an athlete so they can't come here with one decent pitch and expect to leave with five Major League All-Star worthy kind of skills? How do you approach pitch design? How do you manage the expectations for the athletes starting in week one, what they think they might be able to pull off over the next 10 weeks?
Yeah, so pitch design is a very broad term, and it really depends on the individual scenario. Just for example, like a lot of kids will come in and tell me they have two breaking balls, they have a four seam, a two seam, a cutter, and in reality, the four seam, the two seam, and the cutter are all the same pitch, and both the breaking balls kind of move the same way. So, you know, the individual situation is going to dictate where we go with the pitch design. But in terms of expectations, the main goal for me is to have these kids leave with two or three better pitches. You know what I mean? So if a guy comes in and has, like I said, they say they have six pitches, I'd rather have a kid leave here with two or three average to plus pitches instead of six average pitches. So we try to set up their arsenal in a way that's going to allow them to actually be more of a complete pitcher and have some success on the field. And the situation is always going to depend on what they come in with. But that's kind of the main goal, is to, one, develop a fastball profile that helps them, and two, pair that with an off-speed pitch that's going to, you know, pair well with that fastball. And then from there, we'll look to add another pitch depending on their situation. But it's just very vague in terms of where we're going to go with it. It just depends on each situation.
Okay, that makes sense to me. One of the things that I think we have failed to communicate over the last several years of running this program is our accessibility to college coaches. And I was thinking about kind of coming into this season, how there would be immense value in communicating to a player's coach, hey, we'd love to chat biweekly. You want to hop on a Zoom call for 10 or 15 minutes and talk about how that athlete's been handling themselves in the weight room, on field, in the cage? We are happy to give updates and discuss how we're thinking about this, how we're attacking it, and take feedback from those coaches, because who knows those athletes better than them? They've just spent hundreds and hundreds of hours with them throughout the spring. So if there's one thing I would like for the coaches in the audience to hear, it's that we are not a closed book. We're not putting kind of a velvet rope around this and saying, hey, what happens behind these doors stays behind these doors. You can talk to the athlete when they get back in the fall. That's not at all the case. I'd be very comfortable saying, hey, Jordan, I got a coach that wants to chat. I'm going to give him your cell phone number. And that's just the way that we treat this as all-inclusive. One caveat, though, that I do want to double down on here, that is not an open invitation for parents to call weekly and say, I need to know how my son's slider is developing. That's a whole different dynamic. It's one thing to be accountable to your coach, but it's another thing as these young athletes to be an adult. And a lot of the time, we will have parents come in with athletes, more on the younger side, we'll say pre-college program, where we can't get a word out of the athlete during the assessment process because the dad's got too many questions or objectives that need to be communicated to us. And if there's one thing that is for damn sure in this program, it's that these kids who come through it need to handle themselves like young adults or just plain adults and take care of that piece of the puzzle. So no, I'm not real interested in putting John or Jordan on the phone with a father of a 20-year-old to talk about how hard he's been working on his deadlift day. But if there's a coach out there who says, you know, I'm trusting you guys with these resources from our program. These guys are very important to their job security. We're happy to have that conversation and make sure that they have some peace of mind, knowing that we are keeping their best interests in mind as well as we're working with athletes. Because I know for a fact that these kids can't get here without their coach's blessing. Or if they do it without their coach's blessing, it's not a great play for them strategically in their own program. So the coach has signed off to a degree. Let's continue to honor that compliment, because the fact that they're here means that the coach said, all right, I will allow it. You guys can tell me if you think I'm wrong there.
No, I think where my head goes with this is, we're very much an open book. I think if you need to hide what you're doing with an athlete, then what you're doing with the athlete can't be that good in the first place. Because I look at just being kind of a S&C nerd and looking at the older programs and older schools of thought. Look at like Westside Barbell, for an example. You guys are familiar at all. With who they are and what they do. They, for years, were, the strongest powerlifting gym in the world. All of their programs are out there for free. You could find whatever they do. But the reality is you can't, nobody's getting the results that they were getting by just doing their programs on their own. And so we'll tell you what we're doing with an athlete. We'll tell you why we're working on what we're working on, what we see. But the accountability, the environment, the constant feedback that they're getting from our coaching staff, myself, Jordan, all our other S&C coaches, our second pitching coach, et cetera, is going to wind up with a better implementation than they can get on their own with that same program. And so, we'll tell you exactly what we're doing. We'll send you the programs. It's none of it's a secret. None of us invented movement. And so we don't own a copyright on it. And so, especially on the coaching side, I would love to communicate more often with coaches than we do. I think sometimes coaches are a little bit too guarded or scared, almost scared to be wrong in the scenario where I'm sure we've been wrong plenty of times and we'll continue to be wrong plenty of times, but I think we're right more often than we're not.
Amen to that. All right, we're approaching the 45-minute mark. I want to wind it down and close this out to give you guys the opportunity to answer my favorite question that I've been asking the team in the last week or so as we've been talking about building toward the program, and that is, what is your favorite aspect of the program that you think is undervalued? Maybe I personally don't sell it hard enough. I don't communicate it to our audience enough. Jordan, tell me, what is your favorite thing about our 10-week summer program that athletes probably should be more aware of coming in?
Yeah, so my favorite thing is something that we've touched on multiple times already, is just the habits and the routines that are built while they're here. I think most kids think they're going to come in here and get this awesome strength program and awesome pitching program, and they do. But in reality, what sets it apart is the habits and the routines that they leave here with. I've had multiple athletes the last couple of years, reach out to me a couple months after the program's over and say, hey, my velocity is still going up. I'm still getting better at this and this. It's all because they learn how to train, they learn how to work, and they take those habits and they continue to build on them, and they compound after they leave here. And it doesn't stop when they leave the door here.
I love that. So it's 10 weeks of hands-on, but it's kind of a career or a lifetime of good habits that we're stacking. Perfect. John, how about you?
Yeah, it's the competition, the education, both of those, and those are two separate things. But I'll touch base on the education side of it first, because that's piggybacking off what Jordan was saying. 10 weeks is a blip in time when it comes to the lifespan of a college athlete. And so, 4 years, you're looking at, 208 weeks as a college athlete. And we control 10 of those. And so, yes, we can make a dent, and our goal is to get you or to help your rate of improvement, or have your rate of improvement be as fast as it possibly can be during those 10 weeks. But if we're not influencing the other, almost 200 weeks throughout your college lifespan, we're not really doing our job. And so I want to have athletes that, go back to school and say, I have an idea what I should be doing on my own if I'm in a situation where I'm on my own. I have an idea of how much I should be pushing myself on a lift, or, what good technique should feel like, what it should look like, et cetera. A lot of our athletes, we see it, with our interns and people that become coaches here, a lot of them started as athletes. And so we want to create kind of like mini coaches with at least within themselves to start. And so that's the educational side. Additionally, and today's day in January, but we're having one of our former interns who's worked for the Phillies, like, present on TrackMan data and how to read it to our college guys. We have opportunities like that that are kind of like no strong agenda, or like, we're not trying to sell your product. We're just trying to give you information that you could use on your own. So opportunities like that over the summer, which are huge. And the competition component of it as well. I think it's like the saying, you know, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. When you surround yourself by a lot of like-minded people who are all motivated and you all have to show up at the same time and do the same thing, you're going to naturally wind up pushing yourself more than you would if you're, you know, at a Planet Fitness on your own in the middle of nowhere. You're accountable to what time you're supposed to be here, who you're supposed to be throwing with, you know, when your training starts, when it's supposed to end, when your nutrition meeting is, all these things that it's kind of like going to school, but the school is revolved around being a better baseball pitcher. And there's no real option of, you know, of not really giving effort or missing class or whatnot, like there might be if you're kind of on your own.
Okay. Well, I'll give you my answer last, and that would be somewhat of a selfish one. What I love about this program is that, look, we've spent almost 15 years trying to assemble this collection of complementary service offerings, these things that make sense in conjunction with each other. But it's not that common that we'll bring athletes in the room and we have buy-in on all of those things. And what I really like is that with all of them working simultaneously in a complementary fashion, I get to actually see the system that we built work to its capacity, which is really cool. I get to see the best version of my coaches because they know that all of the variables outside of their area of expertise are locked in. And I get to see the best version of our training environment. And I get to see really what we're capable of as a team. So I say that selfish because, yeah, I like to see the business work properly. But I also know that it is absolutely positively in the best interest of the athlete. We magnify outcomes during 10 weeks that we couldn't otherwise get with an athlete who comes in and does one or two or three of the things because we know that we're handholding in a lot of facets. So for me, favorite thing is watching it all come together like a perfect symphony. All right, we're going to wrap it there. We are by no means closing the door on answering questions about this program. So I would encourage anyone who's interested in discussing with us to reach out. Best way to do so is to shoot us an email. CSPMASS, M-A-S-S, @gmail.com is the best way to go about it. If you do find that you came away from this conversation with more questions than answers, then by all means, bully us with email. We're ready to answer those questions. We'd love to see as many athletes as possible in the program this summer. But we also will find ourselves on occasion kicking kids away and saying, hey, it's not right for you. It's best that you go play your summer ball. And it's up to us to make those calls in the moment. We're going to wrap it there. Hopefully, Mr. Cressy invites me back to do something of this nature again. And I know John and Jordan will continue to be regulars down the road. But for now, signing off with my first edition of the Elite Baseball Development Podcast. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the CSP Elite Baseball Development Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd be thrilled if you'd consider subscribing to the podcast and leaving us a review to read on iTunes. We welcome your suggestions for future guests and questions. Just email elitebaseballpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for your continued support, and we'll see you next episode.